Welcome to PDGA Radio with Grant Zeller and Jennifer Allen. Now, as you know, we are wrapping up Women's History Month. This week, we shift gears a little bit, but we want to continue to tell you the stories of women in disc golf. And we're going to talk to Chelsea Howells. Chelsea is interested in the, we'll call it the psychological aspects of what we do on the course and what we do in preparation. She is captivated by the mental game. And matter of fact, so captivated, she just loves to talk about it. So we figured, well, let's turn the microphones on and let's do just that. So enjoy this, and maybe you might even pick up on a tip or two. It's Chelsea Howells on PDGA Radio. Welcoming in Chelsea Howells here on PDGA Radio. We're all smiling because we're impressed with our software. We get to see each other. You don't get to see all of us right now as you listen, but you get to hear Chelsea's story. Maybe you already have heard Chelsea. So, well, first of all, welcome, Chelsea.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, go ahead and share, if you will, in your own little pitch here. This is the floor is yours. Why people may. They may not realize it, but they've already heard you.
I don't know. Have they heard me?
On the podcast.
Well, yeah, maybe. I guess it's hard to tell how big of a footprint or impact you have, because really you're just recording it into a microphone in a dark room by yourself, which is perfect for my introvert heart. But I don't know. I think... I'm just kind of doing what I'm doing and hoping that it resonates with some people out there.
Well, we can start back and we'll get into, since your podcast is around disc golf, let's go back to kind of the beginning. How long, Chelsea, have you been playing? We play together on
every once in a while, but when I play good.
How long have you been playing and what got you into disc golf?
I have been playing for 3 years. This is my fourth season. I usually put a little bit of an asterisk on that because I was pregnant for half of that time.
But you can count that because this girl played throughout her entire pregnancy and won tournaments.
I won.
You can count that. I agree. I did it. It's me not very easy. But.
What an experience.
Yeah, me and Tian won LVC 2 years ago in FA1 when I was 5 months pregnant. And then I had my baby. And 1 month after I had my baby, we went to Florida to play Am Worlds. And I made the cut the last day. So that was good. And then all of last season was kind of a tester season for me to see, I don't know, if I could see a future in disc golf or if I could maybe kick the habit, because I'm pretty addicted to this thing. and I kind of found out I couldn't. I, towards the end of last year, kind of decided to double down on disc golf, go all in. I took some time off work and launched the podcast, did a bunch of A-tiers all around the country to see if I could make a play for Rookie of the Year. I ended up getting third, which is fine.
Yeah, it's still a great accomplishment.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And so this year, I'm still working full time, but I'm doing the podcast and doing some A-tiers every once in a while in Elite Series. Just living my disc golf dreams. I love it so much. I wish I could stop, but not really.
It's way too addicting.
It is so addicting.
The podcast, for those that have been, you know, waiting to hear what we're talking about, that is the Basket Case podcast, available at basketcasepod.com. And that has been your, shall we say, the outside the ropes contribution to the disc golf universe over, well, how long? When did you first decide this is a topic and this is a conversation that I want to have? Talking about, of course, the mental game in disc golf.
Yes. So Disc Golf Basket Case is the podcast I started last season. We only have one season out from the 2022 off season. I kind of have always had a very big interest in psychology. I almost double majored in it, but decided to go down the graphic design route. I'm a brand designer in my day job. So designed the brand of the podcast, of course. Mm-hmm. But I think the main driver was trying to normalize mental health in general in disc golf, but also just like storytelling in our sport. I think everybody loves hearing what happens when it's almost like a ritual, right? You play around and then you get together with your friends and go through all of your shots and what happened. And then this happened. And then I doubled and then I birdied. And we love telling those stories and we love hearing those stories. And I think my perspective from, you know, having a woman's perspective, a mom's perspective, kind of allows some of the majority of the people who are in the sport of disc golf to kind of relax and open up a little bit more. They feel like they can be a little bit vulnerable because it's okay to share your mental health struggles and your mental game struggles and kind of admit about when you're struggling with something if the person you're talking to is like not intimidating.
Right.
As long as they don't scare you, then you're fine, right?
yes. So, yeah, I started the podcast, like, one, because I'm just obsessed with it. Two, because I myself am a basket case. I know that I have a lot of physical skills and a lot of athleticism. And that part, you know, can always be improved. But so much of my game where I kept falling short was in the mental side of feeling like I was telling myself a personal story that was keeping me back from, you know, living my potential. So like that was a big part of it was like increasing performance just for other people, but for myself as well, but also increasing the enjoyment. Like disc golf at the end of the day should be fun. It's so fun. That's like why we're all addicted to it. Right. But also that winning and playing good is kind of fun, too.
If we can have it all.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
We definitely know that disc golf is definitely a mental game. Golf in general.
Yeah.
Is, you know, so much of it is between the ears. And there are so many players all around the world that have great physical skill. But to achieve that highest level, mm-hmm. we have to have the mental side of it. And
right.
talking through that is very helpful.
Yeah.
Do you ever talk about like tips and tricks and things that,
yes.
that you know, people can do to play better? And I'm sure, you know, there's always parallels between performing well at a sport, especially an individual sport like disc golf, and like daily life. I know there are parallels, yeah. but do you ever talk about those kinds of things? Can you share with us?
Absolutely. The podcast is kind of built around the idea of first person storytelling from disc golf professionals. So although we have two different types of episodes, so we have episodes where a pro disc golfer, Aaron Gossage, Kona Panas, Eagle McMahon, they come on my show and they tell me about their mental game. We go through their strengths, their struggles. What are you a basket case about lately? And then some of the strategies that they use when they hit those roadblocks or the strategies they've learned from growing from going through those things. And it's all, you know, that first person storytelling. So that's one type of episode we do. And then after we do the pro interview, we'll do an immersive episode, which is really like a breakdown of that pro's experience into like the pieces of like what was going on between their ears in those moments, because it's so relatable. Like we've all had those moments where you miss a 15 footer for an unexplainable reason, or you miss a putt and then the rest of your round just tanks. And like, why is that? What was happening? So we kind of like outline those things with like verbiage, like we give you definitions and terms to Google and like research, just to give you some action and awareness to how you can incorporate their experience to help it improve your own mental game. And then at the end of those immersive episodes, we usually do some listener sends as well. That's like stories that people send me about their own experiences.
Nice. So that you get the interaction mm-hmm. with your listeners.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite
I don't know if I should call them coping mechanisms or if I should call
them tips and tricks.
Yeah. I don't really know what the most appropriate term to call them, but do you have any favorites you've heard either from a listener or from one of your guests where you've been like, that is a really creative way of, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It's interesting that every single person who's come on the podcast so far has mentioned breath work. Every single one. Everyone kind of has their own battle, their own struggle, their own strength. But every single one has mentioned breath work. And like Eagle's episode, he even breaks down like the different types of breath work that he does. He has like a coffee style that amps him up. He has a water style that like turns him to baseline. He has a whiskey that like calms him down. Really, really interesting stuff. But some of the other of my favorites are Allie Smith talking about how she came into AmWorlds last or 2 years ago and won because she had this like beautiful combination of low expectations and high confidence. Little nuggets of things like that, that it's like, you're right. When I do bad, it's because I'm placing all this expectation on myself and I have really low confidence. Like, need to figure out how to reverse that. Erin Gossage talked about a concept called tilting, which I have been focusing a lot in my own mental game because I totally do this. But it's when you do something like uncharacteristically bad or uncharacteristically good, whether it's bad luck or bad skill. And it affects subsequent shots in your round to the point where like you can't recover. So I think it's a poker term, but once you start tilting, then it's like hard to get back to playing your game and refocusing. Some other things are considering whether you have an offensive versus a defensive playing style in disc golf. Like some people prefer to come from behind and be the underdog. They'll put themselves in those positions because that's where you thrive. And some people prefer to like not focus on scoring, just hold position, play their game. So stuff like that has been really insightful, incorporating it into my own game and seeing like pretty big improvements in just a few months. But outside of that, I think the biggest point for me personally has been considering like the self-talk and the stories we tell ourselves, realizing that like you're putting a ceiling on yourself sometimes. So just investigating that and also just hearing the kind of things that other people do is just really humanizing and empowering.
Yeah, we all go through so much of the exact same battles. It's just how we all learn to or cope or don't cope with it. You know, there's so many times that we just let them build and then we don't ever deal with them. So this is a great way to kind of open up and listen to your show to get different ways that might work for you and not for others.
Yeah.
Chelsea, are there any books that you personally like? I know like I talked to Kat recently and she listed off a book or two. We hear like Ricky mentioned some books that he really loves. Are there some books about this that you personally enjoy or have gotten some great advice from?
Absolutely. I think if you want to check out the full list, I do have a reading list on our website, basketcasepod.com. There is a whole section of our reading list that's books that either I recommend or books that people like Eagle and other people have mentioned on the podcast. We put it on our list. But I think two of the biggest ones for me are Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. That's an amazing one, as well as the other one that I love is The Inner Game of Tennis. I know that it's tennis and not disc golf, but they're both like very individual
sports. Yeah, still an individual sport.
Oh my gosh. It talks so much about like the interplay of like self one and self two, letting your like body do the driving and not overthinking. Yeah, definitely check out the website. It has a whole reading list as well as we do have a Spotify playlist as well of pro picks from this last season. So every pro kind of added to the playlist, what kind of songs they listen to. So yeah, Robert Burridge's episode really like dug down into music and how it can affect your mental game or improve your mental game.
And Jennifer, you listen to music while you play.
I was going to say, people always ask me what I listen to and it's such a wide variety, but I do listen to one song on repeat until I do need that a change. Yeah, until I need a change.
Yeah.
And depending on if it's open chorus or Witted chorus, I change my the BPM of the song, if it's fast or slow. My son was making fun of me this last weekend in Memorial because I started dancing. So he thought I was listening to something really upbeat and he kind of looked back. And I was like, no, I was actually just trying to kind of pump myself up. The song I was listening to over and over was actually called Heaven. And so it was not a very upbeat song, but I was just personally trying to kind of get myself in a good mood. But yeah, I definitely do. And I will change the song. Sometimes if I'm in a rhythm, that song lasts the entire round.
Yeah.
And then, some courses really have different styles of, one whole requires this and one whole requires that. And so I'll even change the song depending on what I need to get in the mood for.
Yeah. And I think that that concept you just outlined is really the backbone of the podcast of teaching yourself to become aware of your own mental game processes and pitfalls. Mm-hmm. So that you can have the action and awareness as your trick shot, when you can feel yourself in a slump or you just took two bogeys, you can have that little bit of self-reflection and say, what's going on here? Do I need to get pumped up? Do I need some calming down? Am I freaking out or is now just the time to reset so that I forget about that and don't let it affect any more shots?
Yeah. And sometimes it's so hard to change that, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes
real
it's
time.
Just a bad mental day.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The first round of the Memorial, I thought that it was the worst round of my life. It felt I don't mean this in a bad way. We'll just say it felt like a 400 rated round, right? It just felt nothing went right.
Yeah,
it was
you gotta
absolutely
watch
horrible.
Yourself because I played an 800 something rated.
So I had even told my brother, I was like, don't watch it because my brother was watching. I was like, don't. I played horrible. But it was just mentally how I felt. It was my mental state that day. Clearly, I had a lot of stuff going on and I just could not get in the mood to play golf, right? Mm. So it felt horrible. I finally had the nerve to watch that round on Sunday after the event was over. And I was like, oh, well, it wasn't that bad. It was just a whole bunch of pars,
it
right?
It felt a lot worse than it looked.
mentally, I was so down on myself that carries over to everything, right? And so if you can get the power to control that, no matter if you're faking it to yourself, right? So if you trick your mind into getting in a totally different mindset, sometimes we have to do that to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. That story you were telling yourself that I'm playing badly and this is not a good round. And, that put a ceiling on you in that round and it affected the decisions.
It was the mental that made the round actually go bad.
Yeah, that's true.
It was just my mood in general, but it was crazy how much it carried over. And I felt like I was playing bad, even though I wasn't. I didn't want to be there. Right.
So. Right.
It is. It's interesting. I've never had a mood affect my round so drastically like that, where I didn't even want to watch it.
Right. Well, it kind of takes going through those moments to have that awareness of maybe that's what was going on. So that's kind of one of the goals of the podcast is you might not have the most tournament experience in the world, but one, it's comforting that not just other people struggle with this, but that really successful, professional, highly paid athlete disc golfers struggle with this. And you don't always have to go through an 800 sub 700, rated round in order to gain experience from that. You can listen to this podcast and get that experience secondhand to give you kind of an edge on when you go through it personally. You might be able to recognize those signs and symptoms and kind of triage.
I was reading all the little quotes on the Throw Pink ad with that Hokum was some of the quotes that she had given or things that she had said down in the convention down in Tucson. And I don't remember it word for word, but one of them was saying don't put an expectation on yourself until you've played with people your skill level, right? Mm. So a lot of new beginner golfers like watch all this YouTube and they watch all these top elite pros and they think that they're not very good. Mm-hmm. Well, get out there, someone who just started just like you, and you're going to see you're actually way better than you think you are.
The psychological term for that is prevalence-induced concept change. And it is...
Boom!
Prevalence-induced concept change.
Prevalence-induced concept change. So this is like what we do in the immersive episodes. But it's basically that, change and improvement happens on such an incremental basis. Like, it is so hard for you to see how good you actually are because it happens so slowly that you don't see all of the progress until if you could play around right next to yourself 3 years ago, your mind would be blown how good you are.
Isn't that what we always feel like when we, say you started disc golf at this course and then you play that course like a couple of years later and you're like, easy. Oh my gosh, do you remember how I could only get to here? So that's kind of the same thing. But Grant, we need to write down some super smart words like that.
I know, prevalence-induced concept change.
We just need to pull
that out of your back pocket
just,
next dinner party.
So
to make ourselves sound smart on this podcast.
I have a hard time myself with the concept of like tricking myself. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I have a hard time with
that.
You want
to be authentic.
I've tried and it just hasn't really worked for me because I'm like, I know I'm lying to myself, that kind of thing. And it's hard. It really is hard for me. It's hard for me to overcome like negative self-talk and things like this is just my issue mentally on the course. Other people have different ones. And I also have never been successful with like the music idea, like what you were talking about, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. For me, that becomes a negative distraction as opposed to sort of a positive one. So here's something that I'm really excited about because I recently found it and I want to run it by you because I want to know if it has a cool fancy term for what it is. Okay. So I like to, you mentioned poker earlier and I like to play poker. And one of the things that I remember being taught was that once you get your chips, they're not really money anymore. They're a tool now. If you think of them as money, you'll lock up because you'll realize, oh my goodness, I'm betting a real $10 right now. And that's $10 I'll wish I actually had in my pocket if I lose. And you'll clam up and you won't want to play the game the way you need to play the game in order to succeed. So once you get the chips, they're not really money until you turn them back in at the end and get your money for them. So on that note, I noticed that when I started playing events again recently, I didn't play for quite some time and then I got busy and I'm a dad and all of that. And I started resolving myself to play a lot more events. And I noticed very quickly on that, especially over putts, I was really getting nervous. And I realized that the primary thought in my mind was this counts. Because when you're out playing casually, you know, you give yourself mulligans or you don't really focus on the putt because it doesn't really count. And of course you make everything. And the thought, oh, this really counts, was causing me to perform really bad, especially on putting, but also other shots. And so what I did was I found a couple of poker chips and I put them in my right pocket, which is sort of where I might wipe my right hand off, you know, on the side of my pants before I grab the disc and putt. So I would feel the poker chips in my pocket. And then I would say aloud to myself, poker chips, which was like the reminder that you've already bought into the tournament. You've already spent your money. I mean, you're here on hole number 5 of your, you know, 2-round tournament. You're not going to get out of it. So stressing over whether or not this putt counts or not, it's not going to help you anyway.
It's actually going to hurt you. Yeah.
Yeah. So don't stress about it. It's poker chips. You already paid your entry fee. You're already committed. So step up and putt. And I noticed two things. One, I started making that first putt more often. But two, even when I missed, maybe because I was more aggressive, the comebacker wasn't nearly as scary. So I could feel more confident running a putt a lot stronger because I was more confident that I could make that. So I wondered, does that have a fancy term?
I don't know. You could maybe.
He was going to say he put the poker chips from the right pocket to the left pocket if he made it or something.
Oh, no. It's just a thing I say to myself that reminds me you're already committed. You're already committed before you even throw the putt. So don't, you know.
Well, it's helping you focus on the moment instead of the outcome, which is a big a big part mm-hmm. of sports psychology. But you could call it maybe a little bit of sunk cost fallacy if you want to throw a fancy term around.
There we go. Sunk cost fallacy. I knew there'd be a cool term for it.
That kind of comes into play for me as well. Like, you know, I work full time. I'm a mom of two. I'm the breadwinner. And like, going to tournaments is expensive. So it's like, if mm-hmm. If I spend as little money as possible on going to the thing, then there's less pressure to do well at the thing.
Right.
Sure.
But yeah, just like taking out all of the extra clutter that doesn't need to be there mm-hmm. when you're just trying to focus on getting the disc in that basket. It should be the simplest thing in the world.
Right. And it is, like we all said, until it isn't.
Ooh, one of the books on our reading list that is actually one of my top favorite books that I've read is called The Phenomenon by Rick Ankiel. He was a Major League Baseball pitcher.
Yeah, I recognize the name.
Yeah, so he was like this prodigy pitcher, and one day, one game, he just got the yips, and like he kind of felt his wrist do something new, and it never was the same again. He like basically lost his ability to pitch. And he has this quote where the brain can take the simplest action, like take this ball and throw it there and make it near impossible.
Is he the player that reinvented himself and came back as like an outfielder a few years later or something like that? Yeah, I recall that story.
Yeah. The Phenomenon. That's a good one. Add that to the reading list.
That's the name of the book? The Phenomenon?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That's on my reading list thing, because I do recall that story from a long time ago and seeing it, in some kind of a mini doc or something on a sports show, but it'd be interesting to dive into that.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, I mean, speaking of diving in, clearly we can go on forever on this topic. And I think it would be really fascinating sometime in the future to have like you and Jennifer talk, maybe after an event, maybe after after Worlds or Masters Worlds or something, and have the two of you talk, and then I'm just there as sort of a fly on the wall, you know, maybe taking notes and maybe asking the occasional third party question on behalf
Grant
of.
Grant just say he wants in the girls' locker room.
No, I did not say that. Wow. But as you guys get in depth, maybe I could be there as like the voice of the listener who might go, okay, wait a minute, you just used a term or you talked about something that I don't think everybody's going to quite get, and make you all stop and explain it a little more. And then, you know, sort of do that kind of in-depth dive in to Jennifer's head.
Brain. Yikes.
That's a weird sentence I just said, but you know what I mean.
Well, and there's some deep, dark places up there. No, I'm just
gonna... There is, but
lots of problems.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that everybody is affected by something like that. We all have like traumas or micro traumas mm-hmm. that like we bring to the course, even if we don't mean to.
Sure.
They're just a part of you. Chelsea, I don't know if you've ever heard me kind of describe how my anxiety started, because I never had any anxiety until COVID. And it was really interesting. It took me quite a while to kind of figure it out. And it wasn't until I was in an interview and I got so choked up. I mean, even after I think like four takes, before I realized what had happened. So in a quick nutshell, I was in healthcare working during COVID. That very first bit of COVID, you know, we were all very scared. Like we could, like it was very, very, I mean, and it's still lots of people lost their lives. But, you know, at first it was like everyone was afraid to like breathe, move, you know, so scary. And so I worked in home healthcare with patients from, I'd say 70 to 100 years old, a lot of them on oxygen. I was the only healthy person allowed in their home, right? And so I became terrified if I entered their home and I had COVID and I didn't even know it, because I'm healthy and I thought, you know, we could carry it. If my patients ended up with COVID, it was because of me. And I carried that burden on, what if I killed one of my patients, right? So that was the trauma and a few other things in life. But where it affected me was in golf and putting, because that's a scary, a very high risk situation. So it wasn't even putting that caused my anxiety. It was things in life, and it just came about during golf.
Right.
Because nothing else in life was, you know, took the stress. Like that was the most high stressful thing I did.
Right. Well, I mean, we talk about it a lot on the podcast, people mention, but you know, you take care of your body before a tournament. You make sure you get enough sleep, and you make sure that you exercise regularly and you practice your skills. And you can't expect to roll up to a tournament having 2 hours of sleep the night before on an empty stomach or whatever, like dehydrated and perform well. And and I think it's similar with your mental game. Like your mental health affects your mental game. And
absolutely.
So, yeah. You know, increasing one increases the other.
Well, Chelsea, thank you I mean, it's almost like what we've done is a summary here, because we've just barely scratched the surface. So I think we've set ourselves up for future conversations about the mental game. There certainly is a million directions that we can go. And
there's probably a mental health awareness month, I'm sure.
There you go.
Yeah, there has to be. So Chelsea, you'll have to come back on mental health awareness.
Definitely.
Month.
We I say we, but it's me. I say we because it's it's because I'm the recorder and the producer and the whatever.
We as in the Basket Case podcast.
We as in the Basket Case podcast are working on season two right now. So it should be dropping in a few months.
Cool.
Well, we look forward to listening to more of that. And thank you again for joining on our podcast.
Absolutely.
The PDGA Radio.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chelsea.
Great. Thank you so much. As always, if you like Basket Case, please rate, review, and follow the show, especially leaving a review. It helps the podcast get discovered by other people and lets me know what you like about the show. Also, thank you so, so, so much for those who have left reviews. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, full send, everybody. No guts, no glory. No brains, no chains. Goodbye.